Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.
You are Locked On Heat, your daily Miami Heat podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to a crossover episode of Locked On Heat and Locked On Spurs. I'm Wes Goldberg here with David Ramil and Jeff Garcia. Jeff Garcia is the host of Locked On Spurs. Of course, we're doing a crossover episode because we are recapping Sunday night's game of the Spurs and the Heat. San Antonio wins 106-99. Kawhi Leonard scoring the last 12 points for the Spurs, 16 points in the fourth quarter, to help San Antonio ink this one out. The game was tied at 91 with 5:16 left, and basically from then on, Kawhi took over. So I want to talk with you, Jeff, specifically about Kawhi, because he's been having a monster season already through four games. I mean, he's really taken it to another level, right?
Coming out of the gates, I did not expect this from Kawhi Leonard offensively. I expected about the same what we've seen in the previous seasons. But it seems with Tim Duncan now off in retirement and the torch being passed to him, he's really taken it upon himself. And I think what you're seeing is just the continued evolution of number two. He is just looking like a player possessed. He wants to be better from stating it at media day. You fast forward till even to today, it's all about improving. And what I like about it is that he's embracing his new role. Recently, there was a GQ magazine questionnaire, and it was like a fictitious, NBA Q&A. And they asked Kawhi, what do you guarantee this coming season? And I'm paraphrasing here. He says, my team will be better than the past. That is just awesome to read if you're a Spurs fan. He's being more vocal. He's being more demonstrative. He's not afraid to even argue a call, something you've never seen before in seasons past, as you guys are well aware of. And you're just seeing him just take his offensive game to another level. Defensively, he is still that beast. Ask Ben McLemore of the Kings. We all know what happened to him. But with Kawhi Leonard, yes, it's just four games. I get it for San Antonio, but my goodness, if the MVP race is starting today, he's right up there. He might be even getting it if he continues this pace.
It's interesting because, you know, from my perspective, yeah, obviously I think he had a very dominant game, but I also see on the flip side that I think he was a little bit frustrated for most of the game by Justice Winslow. And I know, you know, you didn't think Winslow could necessarily match up well with Kawhi before the game. And I think that still might be the case. Clearly, he led it, and, you know, he led statistically in almost every category. But I still think that there was something to the way that Winslow was able to harass Leonard. And I think he stayed with him most of the time. He limited him to just a few points before the fourth quarter started. And I don't think he was guarding him for most of the fourth either. So I think if anything, those points came at the line as the game was starting to pull away in San Antonio's favor. I think with Deion Waiters guarding him instead of Justice Winslow, that maybe that's why he started getting a little bit more of his production in the fourth. But I think, would you agree from your perspective as a Spurs fan that maybe Winslow was doing a good job of harassing Leonard?
Yeah, and I actually thought also, aside from Winslow, the Heat collectively were doing a good job at surrounding him, getting the ball out of his hands as much as they could. Every time he penetrated into the lane and was going attacking the rim, you either saw Whiteside or you saw Whiteside come at him. You saw Winslow, you know, still surrounding him and hounding him. So I like what Miami did, but at the end of the day, I think it just came down to Kawhi in that fourth quarter just wanting it more. And with help from Spo for making that defensive switch, I don't know what he was thinking, but hey, as a Spurs fan, I'm loving it. But do you think in this situation that Kawhi just exploded? I mean, how much is that really Kawhi, or is that really what Miami did defensively, or lack of defensively in that fourth quarter?
I think it's even parts both, to be honest. I think when you have a player like Kawhi, he's going to get going in the fourth quarter. I mean, we've seen, you know, I don't want to lazily make comparisons here, but we've seen LeBron do similar things where he just kind of has an even first three quarters and then blows up in the fourth quarter. We, in Miami, know very well Dwayne Wade can do the same thing and score the last 8 to 15 points for a team to carry them to a win. And that's exactly what Kawhi's doing here. He was their closer when they needed one. And what struck out to me was that the Heat didn't necessarily have a closer, actually. You know, they moved the ball well in those last few possessions. On almost every possession that wasn't a transition possession in the last 2 minutes, Goran Dragic, Tyler Johnson, and Justice Winslow all touched the ball on each possession. Mm-hmm. Where for the Spurs, on the flip side, Kawhi was basically the guy with the ball on those last few possessions. Not to say he was ball hogging it or hero balling it, but he has the ability to do what they needed. And specifically on that Winslow and Leonard matchup, I was tracking it unofficially. I have Kawhi Leonard making 4 of 6 shots with Winslow on him.
Hmm.
And
interesting.
And particularly in the fourth quarter, Winslow wasn't on Kawhi because, like, exactly what you're alluding to, Spoelstra took Winslow off of Kawhi Leonard because Winslow was in foul trouble. He had 5 fouls at that point, and he put Deion Waiters on him instead. And Deion Waiters is considered Miami's second-best wing defender, and he's been guarding the second-best perimeter offensive player on the opponent for this entire season. That's going to be the case until Josh Richardson comes back. But with that decision, Kawhi was really able to get going, and this has now become a 2-game pattern for Spo, because in that last game against Charlotte, in the game where they blew a 19-point lead, it's not because of this, but Spoelstra waited a very long time to put Whiteside back in the fourth quarter, and that may have cost them the game. And I think his decision here to take Winslow off of Leonard at the end of the game may have cost them the game here too, because Kawhi scored 4 straight points on Waiters as soon as Waiters, those first couple possessions that Waiters was on him, that Spo put Waiters on him. So Kawhi recognized it immediately and was like, probably got big eyes at that point and was like, okay, here we go. So I think if Spoelstra didn't do that and just risk Winslow getting that foul, and that for me is like, that's always been a philosophy on my part where I don't like when coaches coach to their fouls. My thing is, this team is young. This Heat team is young. They're going to make mistakes. Just let them make mistakes, especially against the Spurs team. Just go ahead and let them make mistakes. If Winslow fouls out and you can't play him on defense anymore, big deal. He's not going to do that much for you on offense where you need him on that end.
Is this a situation where in tonight's game, granted, it is very early in the season, and like I mentioned, 4 games in for the Spurs, but Miami, I'm looking at their stats, they're pretty good defensively mm-hmm. so far, holding teams under 90 points per game. Under 100 points per game. Heading into this game, I actually thought it was going to be a very slow, boring game with 2 defensive teams just clashing. But it was kind of entertaining. Does Miami have the capability of running, or are they more a situation where they're going to rely on their defense?
I think a little bit of both, to be honest with you. I think defense is still where their collective bread is buttered. But I think offensively, you know, now that the ball is out of Dwayne Wade's hands and mostly in Goran Dragic's, I think he wants to push the pace a little bit. That's something that they, you know, was a point of emphasis for them this season. I think that's been the case. And I'll also add the caveat that as far as the points per game allowance from Miami's defense, we also play Orlando in the season opener, and they have a hard time scoring. So right. I think that's going to help everybody's defensive numbers throughout the course of the season, just because they struggle to break 85 on a given night, you know. So
The Heat also play 48 minutes with a true center on the floor. There's no situation where Whiteside comes off and they shift to a small ball unit with James Johnson at the 5 or something like that. At that point, Willie Reed comes in, and they're playing 48 minutes with a true center. So where a lot of the teams, I think, in the NBA are playing stretch 4s at center and small ball units when their starting center comes off the floor, the Heat aren't doing that. So I think they are capped a little bit somewhat as far as what their pace can be, but I think they're going to be faster than what they were last year.
Yeah. You know, and circling back to the game, you know, when I look at this game, the Spurs almost kind of did it to themselves. 15 turnovers leading to 21 Heat points. You know, it was just a lot of sloppy play from the guys in silver and black. So did not like that about that. And then, of course, you know, shocking, you know, Manu Ginobili with 5 of those turnovers. You know, I just felt they looked kind of out of sorts. And
LaMarcus Aldridge wasn't playing.
You know, but Pau Gasol was still playing, and he had a great game.
Yeah.
You know, I think this, and then you bring in Dwayne Dedman. You know, he looked, he was being a presence for San Antonio in tonight's win versus Miami. But this was just uncharacteristic from the Spurs. 15 points, 21 Heat points. I'm sorry. Let me do that again. Sorry. 15 turnovers for San Antonio, 21 points for Miami. Not characteristic of a Spurs team coached by Popovich. So Heat were definitely doing something defensively to San Antonio in tonight's game.
Well, it was the second night of a back-to-back for San Antonio, right? So, I mean, a little exhaustion maybe late in the game, although that didn't certainly show from Kawhi in the fourth quarter. But, I mean, you have to expect that would probably have some kind of an impact for San Antonio. But I think they played solid overall. Gasol in particular his points were more impactful, I think, overall, just because he helped create that initial separation from Miami. I think he was the more consistent scorer throughout the game. Every time Whiteside kind of hedged off him in a pick and roll coverage, Gasol would be open from 18 feet, and all of a sudden he would knock down that feathery jumper of his. And he was, I think he was the most impactful player for San Antonio, because although he finished with 20 points to Kawhi's 27, it seemed much more evenly distributed. He also had 11 rebounds as well. So there was certainly a lot of impact there from Paul's end. So I think, can I ask you this question then? I'm curious, because I think the Heat broadcast team brought it up, and I think I've seen it from my perspective as well. Would you say that despite the loss of Duncan, would you say that Paul's addition has added a new dimension to San Antonio's offense? Because they certainly looked a little bit more fluid, I think, even than they have over the last few seasons. And obviously, his offense is a big part of what makes them more effective moving forward.
I would have to agree with that to a certain extent. Duncan was a liability offensively towards the tail end of his career. The ball would just pretty much stop in his hands in the paint. He would either kick it back out or attempt for a shot at the rim that usually wouldn't go in. Is the ball and the offense flowing a little bit more offensively with Powell? Yes, I agree it is. Now, Powell hasn't really started off great with the Spurs, excluding tonight's win, but I think it's just that situation where he needs more time to integrate himself. And ironically, I think when LaMarcus not playing today versus the Miami helped Powell to feel more comfortable and not, taking a shot now. And I think what you're seeing right now with Powell is kind of what LaMarcus went through his first season in San Antonio, deferring, trying to find his way. And it wasn't until at that time, the original big three, Parker, Duncan, and Manu, told him, what are you doing? Take over, to be yourself. And that's going to happen to Powell. And then when that happens, forget about it. LaMarcus and Powell and underneath the paint, and that's nightmares for any team defensively. But Powell definitely brings that outside mid-range shot. He definitely is a little swifter on the feet than Duncan was. So, yeah, it's pretty much obvious that with Powell, the offense does flow smoother, unlike Duncan did. But, you got to give Duncan a pass. The wheels came off in the last couple seasons with him. He just was not the same player.
Sure.
I do have another question for you, Jeff. I know that David and I have a specific app that we like to use to buy tickets. And we try to prop that application out, that website out on the Locked On Heat podcast. I'm wondering if you use a similar provider on Locked On Spurs.
Yeah, definitely. Locked On Spurs, especially for today's recap, is brought to you by SeatGeek. Now, I know you guys have it on your cell phone. I have it on my cell phone. The SeatGeek app is just pretty good. It's pretty awesome. Basically, you can buy any ticket for the NBA, MLB, NFL, whatever sport. Download it right to your phone. Present it at the gate. They scan it. You're in. I mean, you can't get better than that. It's user-friendly. It's mobile-friendly. Tickets are backed by the 100% guarantee, so you're not going to get ripped off. You're going to get the real deal. And it gets even better. Once you download the app, you go to their settings tab, and you want to click add a promo, and you're going to put in there LO Spurs. That's LO Spurs. And guess what? You get a $20 rebate off your first purchase.
You can also put in LO Heat.
Yeah. Yeah, I was about to mention that. The Heat have that too, right?
Yeah.
You can I mean, you guys,
in,
yeah, yeah.
Put in the promo code LOHEAT, and you also get $20 rebate after your first purchase. How much of a coincidence is that? You mentioned using it for sports. You can use it for concerts too. I'm actually trying to convince my girlfriend now to go to a Green Day concert with me in December. And if I can get her to say yes, I've already got the tickets on SeatGeek earmarked and ready to go. At a push of a button, I'll have those tickets and be like, you can't get out of it now. We're going.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Do they have like price monitoring? I think they do, right?
That sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I have. You can have email. Yeah. I have email notifications. So like if something gets to a certain price or even becomes available, I'll get a notification sent right into my email inbox. It's pretty cool.
Right. So Locked On Heat and Locked On Spurs urge you to go download the SeatGeek app right now. Type in LO Heat, LO Spurs, $20 coming right back at you. So go download the SeatGeek app right now.
$20 is a lot of money, man. That can get you a few rounds of beer. That's a good deal.
You're gonna need a few rounds of beer to go through a Green Day concert, man. Let me tell you, I don't know what you're thinking.
Hey, man, I like Green Day. Also, yeah. If you're going to a game, like you want, like $20. I spent $20 on a slice of pizza and a beer the other, and a nice IPA, but still a beer at a San Francisco Giants game the other night. I should have just used SeatGeek to go to that game. If I didn't get the tickets for free, I probably would have, and then I would have had my pizza and beer paid for. From SeatGeek, basically.
Then you would just spend it on parking.
That's just general economics.
Public transportation
in San Francisco, man. That's what it's all about.
Oh, yeah. We're from Miami. We don't know what that means. We don't have transit in Miami.
That's right. That's like a bus. You guys take buses here? All right. Anyway, back to this game. So, right, the fourth quarter. I mean, we can dissect this thing as much as we want, but I really think that this game was so closely played throughout the game, really down the stretch, that the difference to me was just Kawhi Leonard. And I don't want to make it just, you know, I don't want to simplify things so much, but really I think that's what it was, is that the Heat don't have a closer with Dwayne Wade gone. They're still looking to see who that's going to be. I think Dion Waiters, as much as I'm still a very proud resident of the Waiters Peninsula, he cost the team, I think, down the stretch. And some of it wasn't his fault. Spo put him on Kawhi, like we said. But in general, he committed 6 turnovers. How many did Miami have for the game? 12. So Deion Waiters by himself committed 50% of Miami's turnovers. That's not good. 3 of 9 shooting, that's not good. I don't want to blame Waiters. He was still a +1 on the box score, but on plus minus. But overall, I thought that Kawhi Leonard really won the game for San Antonio when it came down to it. And if you're the Heat, you've got to be proud. A young Heat team's got to be proud of the way they came out against the Spurs. I know that they were at home. I know the Spurs.
You know, I was going to ask you. Brought up a good point.
But still.
I'm sorry, guy. I didn't mean to cut you off. But you're mentioning about a closer for Miami. You don't consider Whiteside a closer in the sense of you can dump it down to him in the paint and let him do what he has to do.
Not when you're playing a good team like the Spurs, who know how to cut off the passing lanes and stuff, and he can't create his own shot. You need people to create a shot for him.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, he's not so effective. His low post moves are extremely limited. I think most of his offense just comes from, you know, being bigger, more athletic, and longer than most of his defenders. And so you saw that several times he finished off missed opportunities, and he collected the offensive rebound and had a putback dunk or a putback on a layup or something like that. But yeah, I think that's where the most of it comes from. He also looks to catch the lob a lot. That's his strong suit. I mean, and it's effective. You know, he still finished with 20 plus points. What did he finish with? 27 points. Yeah, he's in a career high. Yeah. So
he was 10 for 15. I mean, he was good. And the game was tied at 91 with 4:48 left, and Whiteside went down with what looked like a cramp because he returned later in the game. And at that point, thankfully, the Spurs already had the lead, so that didn't help either, because they were able to go right at Willie Reed and attack Willie Reed a little bit. So that didn't help. But I also thought Goran Dragic tried to become the closer in that game. You know, he made a layup with, what was it, 6 minutes or almost 7 minutes left to give the Heat the lead. And then with 55 seconds left, hit another great contested layup to bring the score within 2 points. And I thought that, you know, that was particularly important for Miami because it showed that Dragic, if you get him out on the run and in transition in a fast pace, he's able to attack the rim like that. And that was where his strength was. They weren't able to do that consistently throughout. So
let me talk about the Miami Heat three-point defense. Allowed the Spurs to connect on 55% of their three-point shots. What do you attribute that to? Just, again, not having the horses needed to get that done, or simply, you know, the defense still needs fine-tuning?
Well, I mean, I think Luke Babbitt is certainly a problem as far as his perimeter defense is concerned. Yeah. He tries hard. You know, we saw that a number of times. He's tried to body up with a guy like D. Lee and others there. You know, he tries to be ineffective. But there were a number of occasions, at least from what I saw, Wes, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but just the defensive rotations from him were horrific. You know, all of a sudden he would be switched on to a smaller opponent who could just rise up and pull up from the, you know, from the perimeter or even drive past into the hoop. So that's certainly a problem. I think it's also, I mean, maybe it's just a really good shooting night from San Antonio, but it's also that passing that's been their, you know, their strong suit for so long. They just constantly were a step ahead of Miami, you know, offensively. They just defensively, Miami couldn't keep pace with them. They were all of a sudden, you know, they were over on one side when the ball was on the other. And it was just very bad matchups, I think, overall. I don't know if it's necessarily the horses or if it's just a really, really good night from San Antonio, but they certainly looked like a much better team than Miami at this point.
I thought it was who was taking the three-pointers. I thought San Antonio was just having a good shooting night. There were definitely some blown rotations. There's no doubt about that. But four of San Antonio's made three-pointers came from the starters. Six of them came from the bench. So I think it was really of a matter of them zoning in on Tony Parker and Kawhi Leonard and Pau Gasol, making sure that they weren't going to beat them. So then you have somebody like Patty Mills goes 4 for 6. You know, and Patty Mills is no scrub. He's been a random scrub Heat killer for his entire career. But you know, he's not going to be your number one target on defense either. So you're looking at whoever's guarding Patty Mills. I think most of their attention was on the other guys.
I laughed when you brought up about focusing defense on Tony Parker. I just started laughing.
Okay. It's still Tony Parker, though. Players have respect for Tony Parker. Like, you and I, we'd be like, just let him do what he wants. But, like, players still respect Tony Parker. But I understand what you're saying.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Hey, your good friend Bertans had a good shooting night. How's his season going?
I had no idea what he looked like. Like, he was on the screen. I was like, who the hell is that? But that's Bertans. We've talked about him before.
Yeah, you know, the last time you and I, you guys and I hooked up, I mentioned, you know, watch for Bertans this coming season. Watch for Bertans. And so far, he's been opening in the last four games. That three-point shooting stroke is just wicked. It's just deadly. 2 for 3 for tonight, 66% from deep. He's just been playing pretty good. And the fact that he's already cracked somewhat of the rotation, Pop has been relying on him a little bit more, especially tonight without LaMarcus. In the past games, you know, he just lights it up. I mean, I'm pretty sure Pop had an aneurysm when he saw Bertans in a recent game dribble behind his back, even though he's at the free throw line for a clear shot, yet back up to the three-point line to make it. So Bertans is just deadly. And I want to make it very clear. He's not a traditional rookie heading into the NBA. He has played professionally overseas since he was a teenager in the EuroLeague. He's played with some top quality powerhouses in the Spanish League. You know, he's played with his home country, Latvia. He's been playing among men since he was a kid, practically. He just needs to get time with that court, and he's only going to get better. Now, is he going to be an all-star? Probably not. He's just going to be a really, really solid player he's going to love to have.
Conversely, I think a guy who's been pretty raw but has looked really strong this season is Dewayne Dedmon. I mean, at 9 points, just 2 of 5 shooting, but he had 5 of 6 from the free throw line and 8 total rebounds. And he was, I mean, he was just a very effective force down low. It seems like he has very good chemistry with Manu Ginobili. And I think I saw this in a previous game as well, but it looks like Ginobili's actively trying to get Dedmon going in games. Would you agree that's the case? Because I know Dedmon struggled at one point, but I think he's since picked it up a little bit. And it looks like Ginobili's really trying to get him to be more involved as far as his offense is concerned.
I haven't picked that up. I haven't seen that, but it's something I'll definitely look next game. But one thing that stands out for me for Dedmon, 2.7 blocks per game so far in this young NBA season. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we talked about him last time. He was one of those free agents that Wes and I thought would be a great fit here, and that's before, you know, Willie Reed was a legitimate option for Miami. But, yeah, we definitely liked him. I saw a lot of him in Orlando. He didn't get a chance to play much, but most of that can be attributed to Scott Skiles being very, well, bizarre with his rotations. But Dedmon always had a lot of athleticism, energy, and he's still really, really raw. I saw a piece from the San Antonio Express, I think, where they talked about the fact that he started playing late in high school, and he's never really been much, you know, he's never really had a lot of experience on the floor, but he's looked really comfortable. And, of course, a system like San Antonio's, I think Popovich has worked closely with him and get him to develop to another level as far as his development is concerned. So I expect him to be a pretty solid contributor.
Yeah, I thought he had a big game against Miami. I thought he played well.
Yeah. Yeah, I like his energy. I do. But sometimes he needs to learn to control it because tonight, 4 fouls. He is a foul machine if he becomes unleashed, and he needs to rein it in a bit sometimes. You love the aggressiveness. I'm not telling Dedmon to stop, but he just needs to play with more controlled chaos. Because there were a couple of plays on tonight's game or during tonight's game where I was surprised the ref didn't blow the whistle on him. I mean, I saw him go out for a shot block attempt on, I forgot who it was already, but he was pretty aggressive and he sent that Miami Heat player straight to the floor and the refs didn't call it. But nonetheless, Dedmon has been kind of a good surprise for San Antonio, along with a guy like Jonathan Simmons.
Yeah, both of these teams are playing well. One thing about I noticed about the Spurs is that with the league kind of trending small, they're playing basically a small forward at shooting guard with Kyle Anderson. They're playing Jonathan Simmons in the same sort of role as a swing guy on the wing. They're not afraid to go out there with like a bigger than typical lineup, a stretchier almost lineup with a lot of length and stuff. And I think that's really helping them. And both of these teams in particular will usually have a true big man on the floor most times. I do want to take a minute to talk about Justice Winslow, who had a really strong game, I thought, tonight. 18 points on 7 of 15 shooting, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. Did have 5 fouls, and that really, I think, defanged him towards the end of the game. He started the fourth quarter pretty hot, scoring 4 points in the first few minutes of the fourth quarter to really get that game within reach for the Heat. And then after getting that 5th foul, I thought he really, the aggression stopped there. He didn't want to foul out, obviously. So, but overall, I thought he had a really nice game. He started slow, but ended up hitting a few runners and drives to the basket. Then he ended up hitting a couple off the dribble jumpers and really started to get his feet under him in that way. What did you guys think about Winslow's performance?
Yeah, I agree.
Liked. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. No, go, Jeff. Go
I liked his aggressiveness. I was really impressed with that. I hadn't really seen that out of Winslow of the games that I have watched since he entered into the league. He also, was it just me or did he get bigger, like physically?
He
looks a lot. Yeah, he looks a lot bigger physically. And I think that he's trying to play more of a, I guess, bully ball. Would that be right to say?
Sure.
You know, if he's driving, you know, make it very difficult for defenders
to try to stop him going to the rim.
Yeah, exactly. I like that progression out of him. So, so far, so good. I mean, I think he's been a nice pick for you guys. Since he put on the red and white jersey,
it's hard to say with Winslow because I think, you know, I mean, at least from my perspective, he does a lot of things very, very well. Obviously, his defense is one of them, and I think we're starting to see more playmaking ability from him and a much more aggressive offense from him as far as being able to drive to the hoop or being willing to, because that was just something that he wasn't asked to do much of last year. Again, that was a different, more veteran, laden team. And now he realizes that, you know, basically he's the star of the team moving forward. But, man, I'm still concerned with the jump shooting. And I know that I've harped on it before, and perhaps it's, you know, time for me to move on and drop it. But there were moments there early on where it just looks so uncomfortable, and he's shooting completely out of rhythm. And, you know, I think that affects his confidence. You know, I saw him in the season opener against Orlando, and I was watching him pregame as he was putting up shots. And it's just, it seems like just such a confidence driven thing for him. And I just think it's going to be an ongoing issue. And we saw that later on, even as he was getting more aggressive driving to the hoop, and he started hitting a floater and getting to, you know, getting a couple layups here and there, he rose up for a jumper later on and he knocked it down with ease. And that was, you know, I think it's just a matter of having a little bit more confidence. And maybe he needs to start off more in the mid-range game and, you know, less on three-pointers, because he was 0-for-3 and he just looked very uncomfortable shooting from the perimeter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that a situation that with the shooting that is for Winslow, is that the next step in his evolution? Is that jump shot, is that outside game?
I think that's the expectation. And I really think you're seeing that expectation work its way into Justice Winslow's game, because, David, you were talking about it, he started off slow and he started off 0-for-3 or whatever, and I think he was trying to force that outside jumper a little too much. He gets that that's like the next thing that's going to jumpstart his career or take his game to that next level, and I think he understands that so much that he's almost forcing it, that he's almost just trying to will that ball to go in, and I don't think it's working. He took an out-of-rhythm pass off the floor and put it up for a three-pointer. It was completely out of rhythm, and I believe it was in the first half. I can't remember exactly when it was, but it was just you could tell he was just like, I'm supposed to shoot this because I'm open and I have mm-hmm. the ball in my hands. And right. I think that starts to work its way into his game, and then after a while, right into the middle of that game, like towards the end of the second quarter and really a lot of the third quarter, he started just being like, screw it, I'm taking the ball to the basket. And that's what he did. He would pass up open shots with either just passing the ball to another player or just putting the ball on the floor and getting to the rim. I think he's really just got, this is going to be coach speak, but he's got to let the game come to him as far as getting in-rhythm jumpers, just like the one you just talked about. It was a nice off-the-dribble. He came off a screen off the dribble and just pulled up because he had like 5 feet of room in front of him. And it was a great in-rhythm of the offense shot. And I think that's the reason you see Eric Spoelstra. We heard him lash out at media before the season started when people kept talking about Winslow's three-point range. And he's basically like, he needs to work on everything, not just his three-point range. Like, he's got to work on his complete offensive game or his complete game in general. And I think that's exactly why. You don't want him to just sit there and think, I have to make every three-pointer that comes my way. And I think he started to work himself out of that mindset and into just, okay, I know what I can do. I can get to the rim. I'm just going to go do that and then get my 3 points on the foul line. So, I don't know if any other observations, lasting observations from this game?
Yeah, one thing that stood out for me as far as the flow of the game, it seems that Miami, when they mucked it up against the Spurs, that's when the Spurs seemed to be out of sorts. And I'm afraid that that might be, I guess, a chink in the armor for San Antonio, because you mentioned about Pau Gasol, you know, and how he lends to a very free-flowing offense and everything. But what if teams kind of perhaps look at what Miami did and said, okay, look, Miami stayed competitive with them for quite some time. Yes, the Spurs did it themselves with the 15 turnovers, but if they muck it up, they play just like an ugly style of basketball, this might throw San Antonio off its rhythm.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I think, you know, the expectation is that San Antonio always feels like they're in control, even if things are going, you know, 100% for them. The understanding, I guess, from a lot of teams around the league, the respect is that they'll be able to get it going offensively, that eventually they'll work through it and that Popovich will figure out something that all of a sudden will have them back on track. But I think, you know, for all the talk about, you know, what you just mentioned as far as the turnovers, mucking everything up and all that, I think a lot of that did have to do with Miami's defense, not as much as it did, if not more so, than San Antonio not necessarily playing 100%, because I think we saw a much more energized rotation there when they inserted Tyler Johnson, and he brought a lot of energy there. Rodney Magruder is a guy who's not a very big name, but he certainly has played really solid defensively. I think that's, you know, we saw a much tighter rotation from Spoelstra today in that he had gone as many as 9 deep and maybe bring in an extra guy off the bench. But today, you know, he went almost exclusively with Luke Babbitt at power forward until late in the game when he eventually brought in James Johnson. But, you know, other than that, he went to a smaller lineup. He had Magruder playing a lot of the small forward position, you know, a lot of rotation there. And those were guys that are versatile enough defensively that can really change things up against an opponent there. And that was, I think that was really impressive, at least from Miami's perspective, because, you know, there was a big deficit early on, and then all of a sudden they started climbing back into it. They started intensifying defensively, and some of those shots were able to fall. It was a lot of that defense turning into offense thing, and I think that's going to be Miami's best, most effective style this year.
If it's any consideration, Miami did give the Spurs their biggest challenge so far this season, so
yeah,
kudos
bigger
to
than
that.
The Warriors.
Yeah, exactly. You did better than the Warriors, that's for sure.
The Heat are, by this count, what, 24 points better than the Warriors? That's how that works.
Yeah, exactly. So that's a kind of a ray of light. Yeah. But, you know, you also factor this in. The Spurs did not have LaMarcus. They still don't have Danny Green.
Yeah.
He was playing very well in the preseason.
Yeah, exactly. But
Kyle Anderson, by the way, did he get the starting job when Danny Green is healthy?
You know what? I thought about that, and this is where Popovich has his biggest flaw. Sometimes he's too loyal. Mm. He's too loyal to the players that have been there and done that with him, that have, I guess, earned their seniority. Case in point, years ago with Mike Finley. Mike Finley was already broken down. He wasn't the same Mike Finley we've seen in the Dallas years. And no matter what, Pop was stubborn to not bring in another player or other players that are playing better than him. He would always be in closeout situations when he had just gone, 1-for-9 for the game. And I see that happening here. I think Danny Green's going to get inserted back into the lineup, and then they're going to have Kyle Anderson off the bench. And yeah, there's a pro to that, is that you have another weapon coming off the bench, like Kyle, that the Spurs can throw at opposing teams. But Danny really needs to just work on his shot. I mean, I don't know what is going on with him. If you look at his stats, just look at a basketball reference, it, you'll see in the past 3 to 4 years, his stats have been declining, like offensive stats have been just coming on. Yes, Kawhi Leonard's emergence, LaMarcus Aldridge comes on board. Now you throw in Pau Gasol. Somebody's going to have to give up shots somewhere. Maybe it's him. But at the same hand, he has that defensive presence on the perimeter. So Pop loves defense, so I'm not going to be surprised one bit when Pop reinserts him into the lineup.
Mm. Yeah, even if he's not getting as many shots, the shots that he does take just have to go in. And I think that's been his biggest problem. I don't know, maybe he's washed up and they just don't know it yet. I don't know. You're right. His stats have been getting
worse. They just re-upped him, too. They gave him a new contract over the summer.
Yeah.
So.
Mm. I don't know. I like Kyle Anderson.
We'll see. You know, trade bait. I don't know. Hey, you want to do a deal? You want Danny Green?
I already pitched. What was the? I talked to you about Danny Green and Deontay Murray for Nerlens Noel. Thought we already had that in the bag. That's done.
It's okay. It's done then. And let's go call up Pop and Spo and Buford and make it happen. Pat Riley.
I'm gonna go leak it to Woj really quick, and then it'll be official. all right. Well, I think that's all we got for today. Thanks to our sponsor, SeatGeek, the friendliest and smartest way to buy and sell tickets. Use the promo code LOSPURS or LOHEAT to get $20 after your first SeatGeek purchase. So if you're a Heat fan, LOHEAT. If you're a Spurs fan, LOSPURS. Whether you're listening today on iTunes, Google Play, Audioboom, TuneIn, or Stitcher, thank you for listening. Jeff, tell them how do you get in touch with your show and with you.
That's right. That is Locked On Spurs. Find it on audioboom.com, Google Play, Stitcher, you name it. It's where the Locked On Network is there, along with the Locked On Heat and Locked On Spurs. Obviously, email me at jeffgarcia74@gmail.com. Would love to hear your reaction to the Spurs' hot start and what Miami did to San Antonio, given the most competitive game so far of the season.
You can get in touch with Locked On Heat on Twitter at Locked On Heat, or by email, where you can send us our mailbag questions, comments, or sponsorship opportunities. That's lockedonheat@gmail.com. Dave and I will be back tomorrow with a postponed mailbag Monday, just because we wanted to recap the Spurs game for this morning. So tomorrow, Tuesday, we'll have Transmissions Tuesday. If you aren't subscribed to either Locked On Spurs or Locked On Heat already, please do so to get the podcast automatically every day. Rate us, review us, say nice things about us, and we'll catch you next time. Bye, guys.
Later,
Spurs.